Good morning. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Lamed Vav. We are on the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Beis. We're starting this morning with the words Amar Abaye. Just to quickly recap what we saw yesterday. So again, going over the differences in the Mishnah between Dina Mamonos, Dina Nefashos. There are 10 differences in terms of procedural differences of the capital case and the civil case. Generally speaking, to put it in a very loose delineation, by civil cases we're more lenient. It's not the best way to say it, but certainly it's, you know, for the most part it's correct. And by capital cases, obviously the consequences are much more serious, and so there is procedurally it's more strict. And also with the other. Overarching theme in terms of differentiating between a capital case and a civil case is that in a capital case, so we have an agenda, and that is the tzilas eida. We want to try to, we're looking for an acquittal. We really don't want a conviction, and obviously if there is a necessity for a conviction, so fine, but if we, generally speaking, it's not the conclusion we want. And so there are a couple of outstanding differences between a capital case and a civil case that also speaks to this idea that we're really looking for an acquittal, not a conviction. We were going over yesterday in the Gemara a basic halacha, which is that you can't open up a capital case on Friday. And the reason why is because there simply is no way to avoid Shabbos. Let me say it better. Let me say it clearer. There isn't a way to avoid Shabbos, and that is if we finish the case on Friday. But we're not necessarily going to finish the case on Friday, because as we've learned already a number of times, in a capital case, if we're looking for a conviction, so there has to now be a halanas adin. We can't finish the case on the day that it started. We have to allow everyone to sit and think through the night whether or not we're really going to convict a person on for a capital charge and have him executed. And so therefore it's going to come out on Shabbos. And why not just simply execute on Shabbos? So we can't do that. We can't execute somebody on Shabbos. The Gemara spent a lot of time in yesterday's daf discussing this point that you cannot execute somebody on Shabbos. Now, yesterday... I'm sorry, let me just finish up regarding the Friday. The Gemara had a number of other suggestions as well. Maybe start on Friday, finish on Sunday. The Gemara says that's not an option as well. That's too long a pause. We don't want there to be like this lapse between the beginning of the case and the end of the case. And having Shabbos just intervening between the two is also not going to be, it's not going to be prudent. People are not going to remember their arguments so well. Yeah, there's stenographers. Yes, it's going to be recorded, but no, not everyone's going to remember. No, not everyone's going to be holding in the sugya, so to say. And so basically the Mishnah says no. The Mishnah says you can't do it. The Gemara says and there's really no way to go about it. Okay, so the conclusion is that we don't have a capital case starting on Friday. Okay, with that stated, the Gemara then yesterday on Lamed Hamad Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud, had a dialogue between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and it was a question of a number of Kal Vachomers that were constructed together. Kal Vachomers, first of all, in terms of Meis Mitzvah. What do we know regarding a Meis Mitzvah? That if you find a body where no one's taking any kind of responsibility for, so we have now a special mitzvah, a really high order mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah to bury this body. The mitzvah of Meis Mitzvah is going to override pretty much everything. It's going to override a vote. It's going to override almost every mitzvah in the Torah. Why not allow it to override Shabbos? In fact, this is exactly what Reish Lakish said to Rav Yochanan yesterday's daf. We know that the Avoda overrides Shabbos, and we know Meis Mitzvah overrides Avoda, so using this using these properties of one greater than the other, which is greater than the other, so Meis Mitzvah should in fact override Shabbos. So that was the discussion that we had yesterday. So the response that Rav Yochanan said back to Reish Lakish is, well, look, I know Ritzicha, in other words, I know in terms of an execution, so there is no stay of execution when it comes to Avoda. So we know that if a person is a Kohen who was tried and convicted of murder, and he runs to the Beis Hamikdash and he's holding on to the Mizbeach, so the Torah says you take him away, despite the fact that the murder is right. So despite the fact that the avoda is going to be forfeited, but nevertheless, so we're going to take him and we're going to execute and actually do capital punishment to him, in order to Even though the avodah is at the expense. Now, what about Shabbos? So, in other words, in terms of execution is greater than avodah, and avodah is greater than Shabbos. And again, using this logic ladder, so then it should come out now that we should execute on Shabbos as well. And yet, we don't execute on Shabbos. And why don't we execute on Shabbos? So, to make yesterday's Amud Beis really short, the answer is because the Torah says so. Meaning we have a drasha. The drasha, the Gemara yesterday quoted the beginning of the pasuk of Lo Sivar Eish B'chol Moshvoseichem. Well, actually, the Gemara quoted Lo Sivar Eish, and then the Gemara said, isn't that the source? The Gemara says, no. B'chol Moshvoseichem. The Gemara ends up saying that that's the source. Because we have the word Moshavos. Another place in the Chumash, we have the word Moshavos. It's in reference to a basin. And you're not allowed, basin's not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. Why would basin be lighting a fire on Shabbos? For the purpose of executing somebody. Someone's chayv sreifa. So basin would have to light a fire. And by virtue of the fact that the Torah says you can't do that, so that is an indication that the execution will not be overriding Shabbos. And if the execution's not going to be overriding Shabbos, so this was Rav Yochanan's counterpoint to Reish Lakish. Neither is Maid Smith. We're going to be overriding the Shabbos as well. Okay. That was all one long sentence, but that's where the Gemara took us yesterday. Amar Abai. Now, we're picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Amar Abai. Hashta. The Amar. This is the bottom of Lamed Hamud Beis, about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So now that we know that Ritzicha is not going to be Docha Shabbos, Basin has an opportunity to execute somebody, but the opportunity is coming up on Shabbos, so he can't do it. Basin cannot do it. So Ein Ritzicha Docha Savoda. So now the Gemara says, now, really, if you're going to apply this kind of logic, so then we should actually arrive at a conclusion that execution should not override the Avoda. Now, I know that's a funny sentence because we have a pasuk in the Torah, meaning the Torah says, right, Imz Bechi Tikachen Olamus, that the if you have a Kohen who is convicted of murder and he's holding on to the Mizbeach, you take him away from the Mizbeach. And even though the consequence is going to be that we're not going to be able to do the Avodah, we have a pasuk in the Torah. So I know his statement sounds a little bit funny, but right now, if we can, I mean we can, just to, I mean we can't, but I'm saying for our purposes right now, let's ignore the pasuk for just a moment. So let's just think about it logically. Logically now he wants to make the argument, well, if Basin can't execute somebody in Shabbos, they can't execute even at the expense of Avoda. And Abaye explains his thought process. Ein Ritzicha Dochas Avoda Mikav HaChomer. Uma Shabbos Shenitchnes Mimnei Avoda. Again, when it comes to Shabbos versus Avoda, so what trumps what? So Avoda trumps Shabbos, meaning we offer Kabanos on Shabbos. So Ein Ritzicha Dochas, and yet Ritzicha does not override it, meaning the Ritzicha does not override the Shabbos. Avodah she'idochas haShabbos, so Avodah, which is now proven to be greater than Shabbos. So if Ritzicha can't override Shabbos, which is lesser of the two, so then execution cannot override the Avodah, which is greater of the two. Meaning, put side by side Shabbos and Avodah. Which one's greater? Again, when I say greater, I just simply mean, you're right, we're not really weighing what's better than what. We're just simply saying what gives in front of what. So Avodah is gonna trump Shabbos because I do the Avodah on Shabbos. And if execution can't override Shabbos, so for sure execution cannot override the Avodah as well. Ein odin shlotei ritzicha dochosa. So that means then that Ritzicha cannot override the Avodah. Now, okay, so we have now a logical argument, and really a good one, in that Basin's ability to execute cannot override the Shabbos, and certainly can't override the Avodah. If that's true, now let's bring the pasuk that I asked you to ignore. So, Hadichsimim is Bechet Tekachalamus, and Abai says, and what are we going to do with that pasuk? So, Ha'ulah Karben Yachid, Delo Dachi Shabbos. So as far as the pasuk is concerned, the pasuk is relating to a karbi yachid, which does not override the Shabbos. Meaning, yes, it's true that the avodah is going to override the Shabbos, but not all avodahs overriding the Shabbos. Only carbon sebor. Only communal offerings are overriding the Shabbos. A private offering is not going to be overriding the Shabbos. If I have a personal carbon that I need to bring to the base of Mikdash, so I'll bring it on Sunday through Friday. I cannot bring it on Shabbos. The Torah does not allow me to bring an individual carbon over that of Shabbos. For a carbon to override Shabbos, it has to have a tzibur element to it, and it has to have a zman. It has to have a prescribed time. Carbon time it is every day. That's prescribed time. therefore it can override the Shabbos. So the Gemara says, so now as far as the Pasuk is concerned, let the Pasuk only apply to a Karban Yachid, when the Torah says, Im is bechite kachen lamus, that you take a Kohen away from the Avoda, that's talking about a Karban Yachid, that's not talking about a Karban Sibor. Okay, so where do we stand right now? So Abaye is making an argument to his brother-in-law, to Rava, not his brother-in-law. That was Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan. Scratch that. That was incorrect. Abaye says to his chavrusa Rava that now we can make an argument that if you have a Kohen who's being convicted of a capital offense, and now it comes to. It comes to Basin's ability to execute, so Basin should not execute. Not on Shabbos. Basin cannot execute on Shabbos. We have a pasuk to teach us that. And not even at the expense of the Avoda. And the reason why it says Abaye now is that we have constructed a very solid, what seemingly is a very solid Kavachomer. It seems to be a really, really strong argument in that if execution, Basin's ability to execute cannot override Shabbos, it certainly cannot override the Avoda. We know that Avoda is greater than that of Shabbos. If it can't override Shabbos, it certainly can't override the Avoda. Either Pasuk in the Torah of Imiz Bechit Kechel Amos, that you do take him away from the Avoda, and that's talking about Karban Yachid, that's not talking about Karban Sibor. Okay, Amar Rava. So Rava now, in response to Abaye, says as follows. Lote Ritzicha Doche Karban Yachid Mikav HaChomer. So he says, no. Your conclusion is an untenable conclusion that the execution cannot override Karban Yachid based on the following Kav HaChomer. And if we successfully make this Kavachomer, so now that means then that we really have no application of the Pasuk, and you can't have that. Meaning, we can't end up in a point where we have no application of the Pasuk. So therefore, obviously the Pasuk is telling us that I can and must take the Kohen away from doing the Avoda. So how do I know that, logically speaking, Basin's ability to execute cannot even override a Karban Yachid? We're now on the very top of Lamed Vav, Lamed Alf, because the Gemara says, consider. Ma Yom Tov Shenidchem Imnei Karban Yachid, because let's take Yom Tov as an example. Now, Yom Tov is interesting because Yom Tov, just like Shabbos, you're not allowed to do Malacha on Yom Tov. However, there is one notable exception on Yom Tov, and that's what's called Ochel Nefesh. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov, even though cooking is one of the 39 Malachas, but for the purposes of Ochel Nefesh, for us to be able to eat, so you're allowed to violate the malacha of Bishol on Yantav. You're allowed to violate the malacha of Bishol on Yantav, and that of Havara, and that of lighting a fire. So these are activities which are allowed on Yantav. So, Ma Yantav Shenidchem Ibnei Karban Yachid. Now here's an interesting discussion and debate in the Gemara and Beitza, and that is the following. Can I bring an individual carbon on Yantav? Let's think this through. We're not talking about a carbon ola. Carbon ola, the answer is going to be no. It's tkulu la Hashem. It all goes on the mizbech. We're talking about a carbon shlamim. Can I bring a personal carbon shlamim on Yom Tov? Let's consider. On one hand, the answer is going to be no. In other words, it's Yom Tov. You're not allowed to bring carbonis on Yom Tov unless it's a carbon sibor. On the other hand, there's also a heter ochel nefesh. We know that with every carbon shlamim, part of it's going to go on the mizbech. Part of it's going to be given to the Kohen, and part of it I'm going to eat. I eat with restriction. I have to eat it in Yerushalayim only for 2 days, and in a state of Tahara, but I eat it. Meaning I'm allowed to eat Karban Shlamim. Not only am I allowed to eat a Karban Shlamim, you can even go one step further, it's a mitzvah to eat Karban Shlamim. So am I allowed to offer a Karban Yachid on Yom Tov? So the Mishnah in Beitza has a debate on this very issue. The Mishnah is on Daf Yates. So, but right now, let's assume as follows. So, let's assume for our purposes of this Kavachomer that you're allowed to bring a Karban Yachid on Yom Tov. Now, again, it's open for debate, but let's assume that you are allowed to. So now, is Basin allowed to execute on Yom Tov? The answer, of course, is no. Meaning, the only heter on Yom Tov that you have to violate the malacha is only for Ochel Nefesh. But for anything else, you're not allowed to. And so, Basin's ability to execute, Basin cannot execute on Yom Tov. So now, let's put this information together in the form of a Kavachomer. Okay, I know, yesterday we ended off with heavy thinking. Today we start with heavy thinking. Okay, but it'll be over shortly. So, Ma Yom Tov Shenidchem Imnei Karban Yachid Ein Ritzicha Docho So. So the Gemara says, let's take Yom Tov into consideration. Where? On Yom Tov. Yom Tov, you're allowed to bring a carbon yachid. Again, it's open for debate, but let's assume you are. And yet, execution cannot take place on Yom Tov, because as vis-a-vis execution, there's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. So carbon yachid shu doche es Yom Tov, eino din shalote heretzicha doche oso. So now, let's put this into a Kal v'chomer formula. Where? Am I allowed to bring a carbon yachid on Yom Tov? Right now, let's say the answer is yes. Can I execute on Yom Tov? The answer is no. So, vis-a-vis carbon versus Yom Tov, which one beats which? So, carbon actually is lesser than Yom Tov. Because I can bring a carbon Yom Tov, and right now we're arguing I can even bring a carbon yachid on Yom Tov. If I can't execute on Yom Tov, so for sure for a carbon yachid, I can't pull a coin away to execute him in order so that he do a carbon yachid. So that now means that I can pull away the coin in order to I can pull away the coin from doing the carbon yachid, right? So the gemara now is saying that if we put. I'm sorry. Let's say like this. And so it's fine. I have now side by side, I have Yom Tov and I have a carbon. And right now we're arguing that a carbon I'm allowed to offer on Yom Tov. Again, it's open for debate, but right now we're assuming you can. So, for Yom Tov, can I execute on Yom Tov? The answer, of course, is going to be no. Yom Tov vis-a-vis the malacha of killing somebody is no different than Shabbos. So, if given now the formula of execution versus Yom Tov. So execution is, Yom Tov will push off execution. So then vis-a-vis carbon in execution or avoda in execution. So if Yom Tov is going to trump execution, so the avoda, which is quote unquote lighter, for sure is going to trump the execution as well. But the Torah says that I pull the Kohen aside and I pull the Kohen away. So, it comes out now that if we apply this logic, I'm going to have no way to apply the pasuk. And the Gemara says, and that's just simply an untenable conclusion. So, Rav is arguing to Abaye that if you follow this Kal v'chomer, I have no application of the pasuk, and we can't have that. To which the Gemara says, "Hanich leman damin nedarim nedarim is craven b'yantav elaman damin nedarim nedarim is craven b'yantav ma'ik lamemar." And the Gemara just simply now, again, says that this only works if you subscribe to the idea that you're allowed to offer a carbon yachid and yom tov. Elam arava lo mi bai laman damin adarim adavim kreven b'yom tov. Dahalam is kayim me'im is bichi klal. So Rava therefore concludes, look, if I subscribe to this idea that if carbon yachid can be offered on yom tov, so then I have no application of the pasuk, and that's untenable. Meaning the Torah says that you take the coin away from the mizbeach. And there has to be an application of that pasuk. And since the Kal v'chomer doesn't allow me an application of the pasuk, so therefore the pasuk is going to trump the Kal v'chomer. The Gemara says, fine. Ela filo man damin damin davis in krev miyom tov. But if you subscribe to the idea that on Yom Tov you're not allowed to offer an individual carbon, which is, again, a position in the Gemara and Beitza. If you take that position, so haksiv mi mizbechi, so the Gemara says, I still know that the pasuk regarding removing a coin from the avoda is in reference to a carbon sheep, not a carbon yachid. How do I know that? Because read the pasuk carefully, says Rava. The pasuk says im mizbechi. What does the word mizbechi mean? It means my carbon, or I should say better, my mizbeach. Mizbechi amiyuchali. Now, what's special and unique to a Kadosh Baruch Hu vis-a-vis carbonos? The answer is a carbon tamid. Right? Meaning that when you and I bring a carbon, obviously that has some sort of favor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously it's lirut so no, it appeases HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in terms of the carbon that is moshach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it is a carbon tamid. So the Gemara says it's mizbechi, it's quote unquote my mizbeach. So my ninu tamid v'amarachman mizbechi tikachen lamos. And so therefore Rava says a critical reading of the pasuk would indicate that even when you have a carbon which is specifically towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning notably the carbon tamid, I'm still to take the kohen away from the Beis HaMikdash and away from the avoda if in the event the kohen needs to be executed. So Rava says to Abaye, so even though there is a Kal v'chomer that could demonstrate otherwise, but a critical reading of the pasuk says that no, that even for a carbon sheber I take the kohen away. Okay, just quickly now to recap. So basically we have concluded that it started all the way in the top of Lamed Hei Amud Beis, continuing to this very point in time, that even though there may be potentially kavah chomers that one can make, that you can execute on Shabbos, you can execute on Yom Tov, you can execute even in the event of a coming, let's leave the avod out of it. You can execute on Shabbos, you can execute on Yom Tov. The Gemara says, although there are such kavah chomers to be made, but the drasha, the pasuk tells us otherwise. You cannot execute neither on Shabbos nor on Yom Tov. And again, that brings us all the way back full circle to the Mishnah. Mishnah says you can't start a case on Friday, and the reason why is because it may end up finishing on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to execute on Shabbos. Oh, yeah.
Did you not learn the concept before that you're not allowed to use logic in order to execute anybody.
So right. Right. The principle of Eino Onshin Min Hadin, that you cannot punish somebody based on a kavah chomer. So the. Right.
I know one is conviction, the other one is actually the execution.
Right. Right. Okay. Let me think more about that. Okay. Right. I don't have a. Right. It's a good. Right now it seems to me to be a good point. Let me think some more about that. We continue now in the Gemara. We're talking about another difference mentioned in our Mishnah, that when it comes to cases of civil cases and Tumat Tahara, meaning just straightforward halacha, I would say straightforward halacha, meaning things that are not necessarily related to capital punishment. So therefore, who is allowed to provide an opinion? Anybody, everybody. The Mishnah back on Lamed Beis tells us that you can even start with a gadol. In other words, you can have the most prominent member of the Beis Din giving an opinion. People around him are going to have a hard time arguing with him, but okay, that's fine. As opposed to capital cases, in capital cases, maschilim and atzad, you only start from the side, you don't start from the top. And the Gemara goes on to explain, to express over here, Amarav, ana hava b'minyana de bei Rebbe. I was part of the count of Rebbe. Meaning we know that Rav was a student of Rebbe, meaning eventually in the course of his lifetime, he went to Bavel, he went from Eretz Yisrael down to Bavel, and he started yeshiva in Bavel. And he started the yeshiva of Sura, right? Shmuel was in Ahada, Rav was in Sura. Okay, but before all that, he was in Eretz Yisrael, he was learning by the yeshiva of Rebbe. He was a nephew to Rebbe Chia. We've gone over this a number of times. And he says that it's just a note of interest, and it's more than just a note of interest, the Gemara is going to challenge it, but that when Rebbe convened and he decided halacha, so he would always start Amarav Anahava Bimyana Debe Rebbe Uminai Didi Hava Mischale Beresha. And he would always start from me, meaning Rebbe would not be the opening position on matters, even non-capital case matters, but rather he would start from me, he would start from this side. Now why would that be? Meaning we just learned together in our Mishnah that when you're dealing with non-capital case non-capital related cases, you should start from the you should start from the top, not from the side. So Rashi points out over here very simply, and something we knew also, that Rebbe Yehuda Anasi had tremendous anavi, had tremendous modesty and humility. Mimnei anavi yaser, meaning the Rashi. Mimnei anavi yaser shai sabo. So since Rebbe had so much anavi, he had so much humility, so he never felt in a need to be the opening speaker, even though procedurally it should be that in non-capital cases, you should be the one opening up if you are the gadol. But Rebbe had extra anava, had extra modesty, and he felt that it was never appropriate. Okay, the Gemara actually over here is making reference to a specific minyan, a specific vote that was taking place. Rashi here tells us it has to do with the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemaras in Gittin are a little bit complicated. It's in the fifth perek. It's right before the Gemaras of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, where there the Gemara was talking about the Romans grabbing land away from a Jew, holding on to it for over a year, and basically having another Jew buying the land from the non-Jew. This was the halach of Sikrikin, which the Gemara in Gittin goes into and discusses for a couple of dapim. Anyway, but right now we're focusing on where the case begins. So Rav is saying that in Rebbe's court, it always began from the side. Gemara challenges, the Gemara says, I don't understand. Our Mishnah says you should start from the Gadol when dealing with civil cases. So the Gemara says, okay, that's true. But in the Beis Medrash of Rebbe, it was standard. Standard procedure is that he always started from the side, he never started on the top. The Gemara does not give an explanation, but again, we could say like Rashi that it has to do with the extra anava, the extra humility that, that Rebbe possessed. From the days of Moshe until Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Lamatina Torah Gedula b'Makom Echad, we never found Torah and Gedula in the same place. Torah, of course, means the ability to understand, transmit, and communicate Torah. Gedula simply means leadership. Meaning, generally speaking, they were two different people. The leader was one person, the Torah giant, the Torah expert, so to say, was another person. But from Moshe, Moshe encapsulated both. Moshe was both the leader of the Jewish people, he was the king, and also he was the Torah, he was the Baal HaMasorah. And then historically, the next time this happens, where I have Torah and Gedula in the same individual, it's Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi now, which is many, many years later. Meaning go 400 years, I do this all the time with ballpark numbers. 400 years of the Mishkan, I know it's not. 400 years of the first Beis HaMikdash, 400 years of the second Beis HaMikdash, that's 1,200 years. And then add another couple hundred years after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, not really that many. So basically 1,300 to 1,400 years after Moshe Rabbeinu. Historically, the next time we have somebody who has both Torah and Gedula in the same person, embodied by the same person. And the Gemara now is going to basically take us historically from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and say, is that really true? Meaning we never had anyone, no biographical personality between Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi who had Torah and Gedula in this embodied in the same person. So the Gemara says, "V'lo ha'hava Yeshua." So the Gemara says, "What about Yeshua?" So the Gemara says, "Hava Elazar." So the Gemara says, "No, because living at the same time, Yeshua was Elazar the Kohen. So Elazar Kohen was the embodiment of Torah. So yes, Yeshua was a leader, but Elazar was the Baal HaMasorah." So the Gemara says, so Yehoshua does not embody this idea of Torah and Gedula. The Gemara says, Va'ava Pinchas, Ava Zekena. Okay, what about the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, Pinchas? So the Gemara says, no, because there were the Zekenim at the time. So Pinchas was a leader, but he wasn't he wasn't the Baal HaMasorah. He wasn't the one who really embodied the leadership of Torah. Rashi points out that Zekenim over here is a reference to Asniel, Ifson, and then Rashi. We have in Rashi and Boaz, but Ifson and Boaz are one and the same person. So the correct Gersa in Rashi seemingly is Ifson, who is Boaz. So in other words, they were the embodiments of Torah. So Pinchas, although being a leader, did not have a monopoly on it. Vahavi Shaul, the Gemara says, what about Shaul, who was certainly the king? And the Gemara is also asserting that he also was the Baal HaMasorah. So Avi Shmuel, so the Gemara says, no, it's not true, because during Shaul's lifetime, there was also Shmuel, and Shmuel was the Baal HaMasorah. So the Gemara says, Vahanach Nafshei, the Gemara says, yeah, but Shmuel died before Shaul died. So that means that Shaul, at a point in his life, embodied both Torah and Gedula. So the Gemara says, Kulashni Kamrinan. The Gemara says, yeah, but in this very specific list that we're making, it means that over the duration of your lifetime, you embody Torah and leadership. Moshe had that. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had that. No one had that during the interim. Meaning, yes, it's true. For a certain number of years, Shaul embodied both. But the Gemara says, but that was only for some of the years of his life. We're talking about, to make this very specific list, it has to be the entire lifetime. V'ahava David. So the Gemara says, what about David HaMelech? Hava Ira HaYeiri. No, during David HaMelech's lifetime, there was Ira. He was the Torah. He was the Torah giant of the generation. And again, even though it's true, Ira Yiri died in the course of David HaMelech's lifetime, making David HaMelech the undisputed leader and Torah giant, the Gemara says, in order to make the list, you have to be both for the entirety of your lifetime. Vahavi Shlomo, the Gemara says, what about Shlomo HaMelech, who was the leader and the Torah giant? Havi Shimon Ben Gera, the Gemara says, yeah, there was Shimon Ben Gera. Vahakatle, the Gemara says, yeah, but Shimon Ben Gera was killed, and parenthetically, he was killed by Shlomo, but he was killed. So the Gemara says, Kulishni Kamrin, and the Gemara says, again, that's true, but he doesn't make our cut, because our list is only for somebody who embodied Torah and Gedula for their lifetime. Ha ha, the Gemara says, what about Chizkiah, King Chizkiah, Mel Chizkiah, have a Shevna. So the Gemara says, yeah, but during Chizkiah's lifetime, there was also Shevna. Now, here in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, earlier in the Masechta, we already discussed Shevna having more students than that of Chizkiah, and having more students is usually an indication that you're greater in Torah. Now, Shevna ended up leaving the fold and trying to side with Sancheriv. Yes, Shevna had an unfortunate demise, but there was a point in time where Shevna was a greater Torah giant than that of Chizkiah. And again, the Gemara says, yeah, but Shevna dies. So the Gemara says, that's true. But Chizkiah did not have his entire lifetime where he embodied both Torah and Gedula. So the Gemara says, what about Ezra? So the Gemara says, yes, Ezra was around, but at the same time, you also had Nehemiah. So again, it wasn't one person embodying both Torah and Gedula. And now, Rav Adarava adds to this point, and that is that, just like we said from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, he had nobody who embodied Torah and Gedula in one person over his entire lifetime. So the Gemara says, we can say the same thing is true by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi also embodied both Torah and Gedula. V'lova have Huna Bar Nasan. The Gemara says, what about Huna Bar Nasan who lived in the time of Rav Ashi? The Gemara says, Huna Bar Nasan mechav have a chayf le Rav Ashi. He was subordinate to that of Rav Ashi, and so therefore, Rav Ashi was undisputedly both the leader and the Torah giant of his generation. And of course, by the way, now that basically we have three historical figures who embody Torah and Gedula, we can also on our historical timeline, we could also basically note that these are three significant points in terms of Torah, in terms of Kabbalah Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu obviously was the Mekabel Torah; he was the original receiver of the Torah, and he embodied Torah and Gedula. Now you move 1,300 years forward into Jewish history, where the Mishnah is recorded. Who is the Mishnah recorded by? Somebody who embodies Torah and Gedula. Now you move ahead another 300 years approximately, and where are you now historically? Aside from the year 500, somewhere in the end of the 5th century. So now historically you're at the point where the Gemara is being recorded. So basically from a Torah standpoint and from a Torah reception / transmission standpoint, when you arrive at these points of somebody embodying Torah and Gedula, so basically you have a significant moment in terms of Torah being recorded. Dinei nefashos matzchilim min atzad. Okay, we're up to the next part of the Gemara. We're on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, about three quarters of the way down in the Daf, and we're continuing now in our Mishnah, noting differences between civil and capital crime, and when it comes to capital case. So who starts the argument? You do not start the argument at the top. Meaning, even though we just learned that when it comes to Dine Mamonis, you start at the top. Again, Rebbe's court is a notable exception, but you normally start at the top. When it comes to capital cases, you do not start at the top. So the Gemara says, and where does that come from? So the Gemara says, Menan Emilia, the Torah says that you don't respond to a fight, and the Gemara here is darshaning losana al rav. Don't respond to someone greater than you. You have an opinion stated by somebody greater than you. You should not be going against him. And here the problem, of course, is that when you have a capital crime, and the first one who registers an opinion is someone who's greater than you, so then you shouldn't be arguing with him. So as a result of that, so have the lesser judges now formulating an opinion first, and then and only then should you have the lower ones, I'm sorry, the ones above them registering opinion. Rava Bar Bachana Amar Rabbi Yochanan Me'ach V'yamadav L'Anashav Chigru Ish Escharbo V'yachru Ish Escharbo V'yachgor Gam David Escharbo. The Gemara cites another pasuk that also speaks to this idea that when adjudicating in a capital case, you wait, if you're the greatest one, you wait to the end before you adjudicate. The Gemara here quoting from Shmuel Aleph, where they needed to exact punishment against somebody. So David, literally the pasuk means that he armed himself at the end. But here, arming himself is a euphemism for giving his opinion last because he knew that he was the greatest of the group. Amrav Shona Adam Tamido V'dan Imo B'dina Nefashos. Gemara now entreats us to an interesting halacha, and that's the following. Okay. Obviously, if you're a member of Sanhedrin, so the basic idea is that you know the halacha already. Right? You've been sitting in the courtroom, you've been interning for a while, and the idea is you know the halacha, right? Lamashal, just as a simple analogy, right? If you are performing surgery, that means that you pretty much have watched, practiced, and you know what's going on, right? It would be a little bit unusual, I think we can just intuitively agree, I think so. It would be a little bit unusual as a surgeon if you learn something new for the first time, and you're like, hey, I just learned this, watch this. And you start putting it into practice that which you just learned how to do. So hopefully there's nothing new to learn. Obviously you improve and you get better with every surgery, but in other words, you're not learning something new and then just putting it to practice right away. And then Rav tells us that when it comes to a capital case, if let's say you have a judge who's learning something for the first time, even though he just learned it for the first time, he could put that knowledge now to immediate application. Okay. Right, and when I put it in terms of the surgery analogy, it should strike you as being, wait one second, you just learned this for the very first time, and now you want to apply this halacha? But Rav says that's absolutely correct. And let's read this inside again. Shona adam latamido v'dan ima b'dina nefashas. So you could teach a halacha to a student, and then you can, together with him, judge a case where you're going to be offering your opinion. He's going to be offering his opinion based on the halacha that he just learned. And even if this isn't a capital case. Meisvei, the Gemara says, now, is that really true? Is that correct? Ataros v'atameos ha'ava v'no. Harav v'tamid amonim lam shnayim. Dinim amonos v'dinim nefashos v'dinim makos. Sorry. Monim lam shnayim. The Gemara says like this. When it comes to Tumah Tahara, and so you have a father and a son. You have a Rebbe and a Talmud. So they could be counted as, as two opinions. Now, when I say we do two opinions, now, Tumah Tahara, truth of the matter is you don't need two opinions. Truth of the matter is you don't need three opinions. But if there is a difference of opinions and we need something to come to a vote, so you can have a father and a son and a Rebbe and a student registering their opinions as two different votes, even though the Rebbe just taught the Talmud the halacha. But nevertheless, the Talmud can act as a separate vote. However, Dine Mamonos, Dine Nefashos, Dine Makos, Kiddush HaChodesh, Ibur Shana. But when it comes to things that require a judicial process, so civil law, capital law, corporal punishment, deciding which month is day is Rosh Chodesh, Ibur Shana, adding another month into the year. So a father and a son and a Rav and a Talmud, Ein Monin Lahen Ela Achad. They're to be counted only as one. Meaning they're only to be counted as one opinion. Now, obviously what's odd over here is that one of the people mentioned is a father's son. Now, a father's son cannot be sitting on the same bench together. Okay? So, right, that's an outstanding problem. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But anyway, what did we just see together? That if you have a Rebbe Talmud, and the Rebbe teaches the Talmud a halacha, and the Talmud says, okay, now I have an opinion, the Braisa says in no uncertain terms, no, the Talmud is not considered an independent viewpoint. The Talmud just learned this halacha from his Rebbe. So you can't count them now as a separate viewpoint. It's not a separate viewpoint. He's just parroting what was taught to him by the Rebbe. So the Gemara says, now if that's true, which the Braisa says it is, so now you go back to Rav's halacha, and the Gemara basically says, so Rav, how could you say that? Rav just taught us that a Rebbe can teach his Talmud a halacha, and the Talmud can now use that newly learned halacha and be counted as a vote, and the Braisa seems to be going directly against that which Rav taught us. Explains the Gemara. Now we're on the top of Lamed Vav Amid Beis. Ki kama Rav kagon Rav kana v'Rav Asi delegamrei derav havitzrichi ulesavrei derav lo havitzrichi. So the Gemara says like this: Rav was not speaking in general terms. Meaning, generally speaking, Rav would be in perfect agreement with the Braisa. You can't have a student who learns the halacha for the very first time and then say, "Oh, I just learned this halacha. Good. My opinion is it's not your opinion." You just learned this halacha. You're parroting that which your Rebbe told you. You can't be counted as an independent halacha, and Rav agrees with that. Rav was talking about students like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi were seasoned students. They might not know everything, but they have tremendous insight, cognitive ability, the power of reasoning, the power of the ability to make and formulate arguments. So when you give them a new halacha, so they're able to process that new halacha that they just learned. So in that specific scenario, like when you have a Rav Kahana and a Rav Asi, and you're giving them a new halacha, so then they could take it, process it, and formulate an opinion based on that. And they're not just parroting what you're saying. It just happens to me. I know it sounds strange, but it just happens to me. They didn't know that particular halacha. But once you provide them that halacha, they have the power of reasoning in which they can comprehend, understand, and implement that halacha. But Rav is in agreement that, generally speaking, no. If you have a fresh student who really does not have the ability to ration and reason, so then you give him a new halacha, he can't be counted as a separate vote. Right. In other words, right. You're not going to put a court together based on a Rebbe and a Talmud in this regard. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, the Amar Rabbi Abahu Asar Dong Yesh Ben Dinim Amnos Dinim Nefashos V'Kulan Ein Nohagim B'Shor Niskal. Okay. There are 10 differences in our Mishnah between a civil case and a capital case. Meaning, if you go back over the Mishnah and you just simply count it up. So it's a good exercise to do. It's good chazara, right? Right later today, do it. And you're going to count up and you're going to find 10 differences that exist between capital cases and civil cases. And now, and any time you try a capital case, you're going to be implementing these 10 differences that we just learned in our Mishnah. That's not what I just said. It's not perfectly true. Meaning, right? One of the differences is that in the case of conviction, we're gonna wait till the next day. In the case of acquittal, we're not gonna wait till the next day. Okay, but still, at least in theory, there could end up becoming 10 differences between a capital case and a civil case. Now, we also learned already back in the Masechta, and we're saying it again right now, that if I have an animal that belongs to a Jew, then the animal killed somebody, so that animal is to be put to death. It's what's called the Shor Niskal. And we learn now, based on a drasha, that just like if the person himself committed murder is to be tried in front of a court of 23, the Shor HaNiskal, I know it's an odd visualization, but he also is going to be tried in front of a court of 23. But the Gemara now is going to note that in that regard, and only in that regard, is the ox going to be treated like a person in terms of all the capital cases, all the halachas that are specific to capital cases. But that's the only halacha that applies to the Shor HaNiskal. But everything else we mentioned, in other words, we're not going to, again, I'm just, you know, just playing this out as funny as it sounds. Right, we said that in a capital case, you say to the you say to the defendant, don't worry, if you didn't do the crime, you're not going to be convicted. We don't give such words of comfort to the animal. the owner's not put to death, and none of these halachas apply to the owner. Okay, Minani Mila, the Gemara says, and where does this come from? Amar Rav Acha Bar Papa Amar Kra Lo Sate Mishpat Avion Chabri Bo Mishpat Avion Chay Tamata Aval Tamata Mishpat Shashor Niskal. Meaning, remember we discussed this also in the beginning of the Masechta. When convicting a person of a capital crime, there has to be a two-person majority. Meaning, a one-person majority is not sufficient grounds in order to convict somebody. However, that's only when it comes to your brother who is poor. But when it comes to an animal, even a one-person majority is enough to tip the tales. So the Gemara says, Asara Atesavu. So the Gemara says, what do you mean there are 10 differences? There are 9 differences. To which the Gemara, this is a funny give and take of the Gemara. Gemara says, what do you mean there are 9 differences? Ha Asara Kitani, there are 10 differences. Meaning the Gemara is going back and forth now in terms of whether there's 10 or there's 9. Gemara starts off by saying there are 10, then the Gemara says, no, there's 9. The Gemara says, no, there's actually 10. Now, this is empirical, by the way. You just simply go back to the mission, you count, and you're going to find that there are actually 10. So So the Gemara says, "Ketana mishum de'ena kol k'sherim ve'asrim v'shlosha chadehi." The Gemara says, "Well, the truth of the matter is that of the two in the Mishnah, the fact that you need 23 judges and the fact that not everyone is qualified to serve on the bench, that's actually not 2 points. It's actually one singular point." Because by virtue of the fact that you need 23 judges, that means that there have to be 23 significant judges. And if you're a convert or if you are a mamzer, you can't serve on the capital on a capital case. And that's a function of the fact that there needs to be 23 judges over there. We'll make this point a little bit stronger a little bit later on. Anyway. Okay, whether the number is 9 or whether the number is 10, so the Gemara says, the Gemara says, you know, there are other notable differences between a capital case and a civil case. Braisa tells us that as a member of the Sanhedrin, you cannot be somebody who is a Zaken, you can't be somebody who is older. I'll explain why in just a moment. You can't have someone who is sterile, and you can't have somebody who never had children. Okay. Why should this be? So Rashi explains, because if you're not trying a capital case, so you have to balance law with having rachmanas. Now, once you have raised a child, so you know that that having a child, that you are, it develops inside of you basically a level of rachmanas. Once you raise children, and if you are old, Rashi says it. Right, Sheshachach Kfar Tsar Gidol Banim, says Rashi, Ve'ena Rachmana, that even though at one point in time historically you did raise children, you've forgotten all about it. Right, it's a blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to the older people, and that they forgot how hard it was to raise children, and then they look at their kids raising the children, and they're like, right, it's like they totally forgot how what it was like. The same thing with somebody who's sterile, and the same thing is true with somebody who never had children. Again, they don't have the requisite compassion that it needs in order to judge a capital case. And Rav Yehuda Mosif Av Achzari, and Rav Yehuda says that also somebody who's just a cruel individual. Now, again, this is something which is not so quantifiable, but if right, the person just is a cruel person, so he cannot be involved in trying a capital case. So other differences here in the Braisa, that for whatever reason, the Gemara does not explain why, didn't make it into the Mishnah, but other differences regarding a capital case versus a civil case. And now the Gemara I don't know what number time, but the Gemara has done this already a couple of times earlier in the Masechta. Gemara is doing it again. You know, when you have somebody who's trying to entice somebody to be over to Avodah Zarah, so for him, the Torah says, no compassion. We just read it last week's Parsha, Parshas Re'eh. So for the Mesis, the Torah says, you're not supposed to have any compassion whatsoever. And including that, you can have these cruel people who are members of the Beis Din, if the case is for a mesis. You can have people serving on the bench in a civil case, people who will not make it into as a judge for a capital case. Gemara says the Mishnah is making reference to a mamzer. So the Mishnah Nida, and this is now the second time recording this Mishnah Nida, and that is that if you are qualified to judge a capital case, you're certainly going to be qualified to judge a civil case, but the opposite's not true. And what's the Mishnah making reference to? And the Gemara discusses, and the Gemara easily concludes that that's talking about a mamzer. Now, basically what bothers the Gemara over here is that we have seemingly the same point being repeated here in our Mishnah Sanhedrin and the Mishnah Nida as well. So the Gemara says, Chad Lasui, give a Chad Lasui a mamzer. The Gemara says, no, it's not the same point. Actually, each one of them is making a separate point. One is telling us that a mamzer is not qualified to judge in a capital case, although he's qualified for a civil case. And the other is talking about a ger. A ger is not qualified to judge in a capital case, but can judge in a civil case. And the Gemara says in that, I would not necessarily know one from the other. Because the Gemara says, consider that when it comes to a ger is allowed to marry a Jew. A mamzer is not allowed to marry a Jew. A mamzer can only marry another mamzer. Also, conversely, when it comes to a ger, his parents are Jewish. Sorry, let me do that better and let me do that correctly. When it comes to a mamzer, his parents are Jewish. When it comes to a ger, his parents are not Jewish. So there are, what it, just in terms of sitting on the bench, there are pluses and minuses in terms of why I would argue a ger, not a mamzer, why I would argue a mamzer, not a ger. That's why I need both mishnayos to tell us that in capital cases, they are both excluded from capital cases. They are both included when it comes to a civil case. They could both serve on the bench in the civil case. Now the Gemara tells us why. That in order to serve on the basin, so not only do you have to be knowledgeable and you have to have a certain knowledge base in order to serve on the bench of a capital case, but also menuka mikol mum. You cannot be blemished. The Gemara here is not talking about physical blemish. And Amar Amemar Amikra, the Gemara speaks now to a pasuk that speaks to this idea. Kulach yafer yasim mum ein bach. The Gemara, the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, that says that you are beautiful and you do not have a blemish. The psukim in Shir Hashirim are not to be taken literally. The Gemara elsewhere describes these psukim as kodesh kadashim. They don't have a simple pshat. They are all allusion and allegory. It's referring to a beis din. A beis din has to be blemish free. V'dilma mamamish. So the Gemara says, well, blemish free. Maybe like a coin being blemish free. The Gemara says no. Amar of Acher by Yaakov Amakrav Yisyatzvu Sham Imach B'domim Lach. The Gemara says no, because when Moshe assembled the first Sanhedrin, the Torah describes it as the Sanhedrin being similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. What does that mean? Similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu had good yichus, so too the member of the Beis Din also has to have good yichus. It's not talking about a physical blemish. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't say that he had a physical blemish, but he certainly had a speech impediment. So in other words, it's not talking about physical blemishes. It's talking about having pedigree. So the Gemara says, Elam Rav Nachma Yitzchak Amakra, So the Gemara says, well, maybe the pasuk over there describing the Sanhedrin, the reason why they were with Moshe was because of the dissemination of Shechina, like we discussed also earlier in the Masechta. So the Gemara says, they're going to shoulder the burden of the Jewish people together with you, Moshe Rabbeinu, itach b'domam lach lehave, meaning they have to be similar to you, just like you are free of blemishes. Again, blemishes over here meaning that of yichus. So too, the members of the basin also have to be also in a position where they are miyuchas. They have lineage. Okay, so let's just quickly recap the daf today. We ended off our discussion of the dialogue between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan regarding all the kavachomers that one could have made, and the fact that despite the fact that we do have a kavachomer, and it could lead us in certain directions, but the pasuk overrides the kavachomer, and the Gemara ended that discussion in the beginning of today's daf. Then we talked about starting in a civil case. You could start on the top, you don't have to start on the side. However, Rebbe and his Beis Din, he always started from the side because of his Zanava. And then the Gemara noted that from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you never had the embodiment of Torah and Gedula in one person. And that was true by Moshe Rabbeinu, it's true by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, it's true by Rav Ashi. And we basically said Torah Shebechsav, Torah Shebapeh, Mishnah, Torah Shebapeh, Gemara. The Gemara talked about in the capital cases, you have to start from the side, you cannot start in the top, based on the drasha of Losana al-Riv, Losana al-Rav. And then the Gemara noted that in our Mishnah we have 10 differences between a civil case and a capital case. And the Gemara noted that the Braisa also introduces us to other conditions, preconditions to be part of to sit on the bench of a capital case. You have to have Rachmanis, which basically means that you have to recently have raised children. By Amesis, however, you can have somebody cruel sitting on the bench. And then the last thing that we mentioned today's daf is this idea that in order to sit on a bench on a capital case, so you have to have yichus. You can't be a mamzer, you can't be a ger. You have to have yichus by dina mamonos in a civil case. So a mamzer and a ger can sit on the bench and they can adjudicate as part of a civil case, but not part of a capital case. And the Gemara says it's based on psukim that brings us to that conclusion.